Morning. The House Education Committee will come to order. It's Monday, March 31st, and the time is 8:06 a.m. Happy Seward's Day. We have with us Representative Seaton, Representative Drummond, Representative Sadler, myself, Representative Gaddis, Representative Peggy Wilson, and Representative Ledoux. On our agenda this morning, we have HB 45, Electronic Bullying in School, and HB 189, Hazing, both of which we've heard before. At this time, we'll hear HB 45, sponsored by Representative Costello. And if Representative Costello and her staff would like to come forward and refresh our memories and make any additional comments that you might have on the bill. And thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Representative Mia Costello. I represent District 20 in Anchorage, and with me this morning is Sarah Page, who's my legislative aide. For the committee, I just wanted to reiterate that this is adding words in a definition portion of statute. And the last time we heard the bill in this committee, there were some questions. And so we've asked a representative from the Department of Law to be here today to answer any questions that remain unanswered from the last meeting.
Thank you. And Representative Costello, will you and your staff just refresh us, since it's been almost a year since we heard it?
Mm-mm.
Oh, apologize. I think that was the discussion earlier. It seems like a year. Yeah. I'll go with that. Just a quick refresher what the bill does, especially for those listening online.
Okay. Good morning. For the record, my name is Sarah Page, staff to Representative Costello. This bill is basically changing the definition set already in statute from 2007 of bullying. And we are inserting electronic and communication into the types of communicative acts that can be considered as bullying, harassment, or intimidation. And this bill is specifically addressing public schools in the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Seeing no questions, let's bring up Department of Law and let's see what they may have to say and see if we have any questions for them. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning. For the record, my name is Rebecca Hatton. I'm an assistant attorney general with the Department of Law. And I was just asked to be available for any legal questions you may have on HB 45.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have a legal opinion in our packet, which was December 31st, 2012, relating to cyberbullying. And in there, it says a, quote, intentional written, oral, or physical act does not, in my opinion, exclude threats spoken through telephone or voice messaging system. Similarly, typing a threat as a text message or on a keyboard does not mean it is not written. Does the Department of Law agree with our legal kind of opinion on the extent of the current law?
Through the chair of Representative Seaton, I have read Ms. Michelle's memo regarding HB 45, and I think she makes an excellent point that I would largely agree with. I would basically say that the effect of the current bill might potentially moot a legal argument that the bill as written presently doesn't extend. I think it provides additional clarity that might render moot a legal argument that the definition doesn't extend to sorts of electronic acts that might not have been contemplated by the legislature when the bill as currently drafted was passed. So, but that said, I think an argument that the current statute would cover electronic bullying type behaviors might also be colorable, but it might passage of current proposed language might make that argument move, as I said.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you. Morning, ma'am.
Good morning.
I was curious why there is a distinction between, oral communication and physical electronic act. So my question to you is on page 1 of the bill, line 11, if we were to eliminate the words communication such that it read cyber harassment, intimidation, or bullying means an intentional written, electronic, oral, or physical act when the act is undertaken with the effect of threatening. So my question is the word communication essential to this? And if so, why do we speak of oral communication and electronic communication or written communication?
The Chair, Representative Sadler, I would probably defer to the sponsor bill about what the intention behind that precise wording was, but as an outsider looking at it, it strikes me as language that's trying to capture the idea that what we consider the ways in which especially students communicate with each other is ever evolving, and I think it's trying to sort of be inclusive of new forms of communication as they develop electronically. But again, perhaps the bill sponsor could add more clarity to that.
And we'll bring her up, and we will put her on the hot seat again. Representative Peggy Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question. How far, as far as your opinion on this, how far does this go as far as if it happens, I mean, does it have to happen at school or like, in the evening, there was some electronic stuff going on, and somebody was threatened, or maybe not threatened outwardly, but looks that way a little bit to the person, and the child gets really nervous about it, and so he doesn't do well in school or something like that. How far does this carry on that? I mean, you know.
Yeah. Through the Chair, Representative Wilson, that is an extremely, it's an excellent question, and it's a very, very, it's a complex one that's been the subject of litigation in all, in federal courts and state courts since for many, many decades. But an old case, a 1969 Supreme Court case, very famous, called the Tinker case, is still used to sort of answer that question. The question is, there's a famous quote from that case, that students don't check their First Amendment rights at the schoolhouse doors. There is First Amendment rights of students exist even within school walls, but, you know, as a counterweight to that, schools have a strong interest in promoting order and instilling certain values in their students. And so there's a more recent case called the Morse v. Frederick case that it's a U.S. Supreme Court case that made Juneau very, very famous. It's the so-called Bong Hits for Jesus case that asked really a similar question, because the speech at issue in that case did not take place on school grounds. It was at a school-sponsored event, but off school grounds, but within school hours. And courts in that case said, okay, there's enough of a connection between the speech and the school day that punishing that speech is legitimate. There are more federal cases after the Morse case is 2007, and post-Morse, the Morse case has been used in several different cases around the country that specifically address cyberbullying, and they use the tests in the Morse case to ask the very question, or to answer the very question you asked, which is, okay, how tangential does this connection, or how substantial does this connection between the school day and the speech? So kid, you know, student A is talking, is making rude comments on Facebook outside of school hours, but a student is so devastated by the comments made on Facebook that she can't concentrate the next day, or she feels intimidated or threatened by her peers. It's not a bright line rule. It's not as though if a student walks off school property and says something that the speech is necessarily outside of the realm of school discipline, but the rulings have been incredibly factually specific, and it's important to note that the Alaska Supreme Court has yet to weigh in.
Thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
So how important is the school hours to the ruling of Morse versus Frederick?
There were so many through the Chair, Representative Ledoux. It was relevant. The court considered it, among many other things. Frankly, perhaps the most important consideration in that case was the value or lack thereof of the language of the speech in question. People weren't really able to figure out even what the student was trying to say with this strange slogan he unfurled in a, on a banner. But in terms of ultimately upholding the school district's right to kind of mete out punishment based on that situation, the fact that it took place at a school-sponsored event during school hours were cited as factors in that case. However, on the other side of the coin, some of the more recent circuit court decisions used the Morse ruling to uphold school punishments based on things that happened at home outside of school hours.
Thank you.
And I'll have to say, last year I was fortunate enough to participate in a forum with a lot of the students that came down here, and certainly that was the subject that they picked to talk about, and lots of talk about how they had rights outside of the school. They did not like this bill, where it would hold them accountable outside of the school. Then there were a large amount of kids that stood up and said, you know, I'm being bullied. I'm being bullied via Facebook, texting, and so on and so forth. They weren't entirely sure that this could be a fix, but it was a start on the right. And I would say those kids that were more concerned about their rights of free speech also recognized that there has got to be something done with the bullying aspect, whether it be in print, on Facebook, so on and so forth. Essentially, these teenagers agreed that something needed to be done. They didn't like the fact that their speech would be taken away from them after hours, but they did recognize that this was harming to their friends and other students. So it was interesting, in a large gang of about 30, 40 kids, that ultimately was the conclusion that they themselves also came to. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A question maybe for you, but it'd be a general question to the sponsor as well. It's important to note this does not make cyberbullying, what we're calling cyberbullying for short, a crime. It just requires that this activity be reported to a school official. So my question was going to be, how many kids are prosecuted under this? But it's not a prosecutable offense, it's just a reportable offense. So either to you or the sponsor, how often is bullying of any kind reported to school officials? Is it a big problem? Is it is it reported a lot? I think we're assuming anecdotally it's a big problem, but how often does it get reported?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I don't have information about that. I don't know.
Fair enough. Just wanted to know if you
knew. I don't know if perhaps one of the, if the representatives of the department might have information. I'm not sure, but I don't know.
It doesn't look like we have any more questions. Thank you for coming forward. Sure. Representative Wilson.
Madam Chair, I thank you. I perceive that if the kids that are being bullied know that there is something that a recourse that they have, even how small it is, that they will report to the schools, and then I would imagine that the schools are going to have to decide how they're going to handle it. And they might say, you know, if there's five or something like that, we're going to take action. You know, I don't know, but I would assume that this will lead to schools having to do something about it.
Well, and I think that this clarifies what we all know what bullying was in our days. We didn't have texting and Facebook back then. I think that it just brings us forward into the world of cyber. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to testify on this? I don't have anybody signed up. With that, I'll close public testimony and move to the committee. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I think that, you know, this has been an important problem for a lot of kids in schools. In the Ledge Legal Opinion on page 3, under section 3, they're talking about, although it's not in our model penal code structure, it does it refers to conduct between school students. So we're talking about a population between students. And so I think that that's the nexus where it comes back to school enforcement policies. And I would be worried that if it's not clear that school enforcement policies can control this, then what we're going to have is kids at some point being charged with harassment or something through the penal code. And I think it's much better to have this handled in a disciplinary way through the schools than it is to get into criminal offenses, even charges being made. And so, Madam Chair, I think that this is a good clarification of the current law.
I do too. Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question for the sponsor. The sponsor statement indicates that this HB 45 requires creation of a policy on cyberbullying, and I don't see that in this version. Are you saying that the creation of a policy is just adding the word electronic communication consists of creating a policy? I guess we can call the sponsor back up to the chair.
Representative Costello. And again, for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Mia Costello, represent District 20 in Anchorage, and with me is Sarah Page, my legislative aide. To clarify what this bill does, it goes into the definition section in statute that defines harassment, intimidation, or bullying, which exists there already, and it adds electronic to the list of ways that people can, that this can be considered harassment, intimidation, or bullying. Currently, if districts have policies about intimidation, harassment, or bullying, what this would require then is that they recognize and look at electronic also, so that this is really a school district decision, and we are asking them to recognize that electronic is a part of how students could possibly harass or intimidate or bully each other. And we do have the Department of Education here if you'd like to bring them up to talk about the different districts. Perhaps they're aware of that. This bill did come to me at the request of a student in high school, and the Diamond High School student government classes passed a resolution in support of it, just recognizing that in the course of your school environment, people do have Facebook and Snapchat and all of these other things that that the school felt, or the students in that school felt like should be recognized when the school comes out and has a policy.
Mm-hmm. Just to follow up on that, yes, looking at AS 1433-200, it does say that each school district shall adopt a policy that prohibits harassment, intimidation, and bullying. And then, of course, you've added the expansion of the definition of harassment. So, answer my question.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Madam Chair, make a motion. I'd like to move House Bill 45, version U for uniform, out of this committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Seeing no objection, the bill is moved, and we'll take a brief at ease to sign some paperwork. Thank you, Representative Costello.
Thank you.
Back on the record, and next on our agenda is House Bill 189, Hazing, sponsored by Representative Christ Tompkins. And again, this bill was originally heard in committee last year, and we'll ask the bill sponsor and his staff if they'd like to come forward. And please refresh us, not that we're that forgetful or whatever, but I think it's good practice for us all. So remind us what this bill does and where we were last year. Representative Christ Tompkins.
Thank you, Chair Gaddis, and for the record, my name is Jonathan Christ Tompkins, represent rural Southeast Alaska. And House Bill 189 does basically two things. It adds hazing to school district policy manuals, I think not unlike the previous bill. And then it also defines hazing in the penal code, and it's important to note, only in the cases of death or serious physical injury. And the value or sort of differentiating characteristic of hazing that differentiates hazing from, say, assault or harassment or other pretty obvious crimes is that hazing is still a crime even if the victim consented to or acquiesced to to the situation. And we've had a long conversation with the Department of Law, and that's really what makes hazing unique and potentially troublesome when prosecuting it in very serious instances of serious injury or death. Because hazing basically takes advantage of someone in a position of authority or power, manipulating someone who's trying to get on the wrestling team or whatever, who's in a position, who's a subordinated position. So House Bill 189 does those two things in a quick clerical note. There are two versions of this bill, version N and version O, and just for the purposes of clarification, just want to make sure that the committee has version O.
And Representative Christ-Tompkins, we do have version O in front of us, and that's the one we're working off of. It's my understanding that version O has been introduced as a working draft. Okay, we're all on board with you. Any questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Ledoux.
So under the current penal code, I mean, I understand what you're saying that, for example, battery or assault, it's a defense that you've agreed to something. But people don't agree to serious physical injury, and they don't agree to something that's going to cause their death. So they might agree to just fool around a little bit, but if it actually does cause serious injury or death, aren't things really covered now?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, you get into a really gray legal area in that the victim can easily consent to, say, the initiation process, and by consenting to the initiation process or agreeing to get on the van that takes you out to wherever initiation is taking, that it becomes very difficult to define where consent does or does not occur. I mean, no rational person would want to consent to having, you know, a bucket of feces thrown over their head or get, you know, hit by, you know. Anyway, whatever the serious and egregious example of hazing would be, no one would ever rationally agree to that. But because you're agreeing to being in the initiation process or whatever statements might be made through that entire process, it can be very difficult to define what was and was not consented to.
Follow up?
Please, Representative Ledoux.
Have there been cases where somebody has been actually injured or killed during a hazing process that the police have refused to prosecute because the defense was he agreed to it?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, in Alaska, to the best of my knowledge, no one's been killed in a hazing incident. There have been serious injuries, and I'm not sure exactly how those have been resolved. This bill was actually brought to us by a teacher in Alaska who felt that Alaska would be the 45th of the 50 states to adopt basically this kind of legislation, and felt that it needed to be amended, both to have this in school district policy manuals and also have it in the penal code for the serious examples of hazing. There have been serious instances of hazing, some of which I witnessed, not directly in high school, as well as Austin, who's on my staff. He's an intern through the University of Alaska and a Thunder Mountain High School graduate. And then we also have an expert testifier online who I'm sure can also speak to the legal gray area that exists with consent and without consent with hazing for other instances around the country.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Did you check with our department the bill that we just passed out of here? Would that cover this?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, it would not. I guess this is, I mean, these two bills are related, and they both sort of cover behavior that shouldn't be happening, bad stuff. But hazing is a fundamentally different kind of behavior than any kind of bullying or harassment. Just because, I mean, hazing really takes place when someone who's in power is manipulating someone who's not in power and trying to become part of an organization or a team. So it's a fundamentally different kind of action.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does this still then, Representative Seaton brought up before that he kind of liked that the school was able to take care of it so that it wasn't, I mean, of course, I think you have, it becomes a misdemeanor. That's going to automatically happen if there was someone was badly injured or killed. It would be worse than that. But with this, it looks to me like there's going to be mandatory reporting. And does that mean the people involved have to mandatory report? Does that mean the school has to mandatory report? Could you clarify that for me?
Sure, and I think it's important to note that 99% of instances, this is going to be handled internally, and the idea is just with the previous bill to have this added to school district policy manuals as something to be aware of, to be trained about, and so hazing, by and large, when it happens, will be handled internally, just with electronic bullying, for example, in the previous bill. I think that's the intent and the reality with that side of the bill, which is, again, every section after section one.
I follow.
Vote. For the record, Representative Gaddis has left the meeting, left me with the gavel temporarily, so Representative Wilson.
Okay. I just wanted to know who has to do the reporting. That was my question.
Sure. Students would report hazing behavior. Administrators or coaches or anyone who witnesses it.
So the school doesn't have to report it to the police, but in order for it to be misdemeanor, it has to be reported to the police.
Correct. It would just be within school. So someone would report it to the principal or the superintendent or the coach.
How does it become a misdemeanor?
And there's also a representative from the Division of Juvenile Justice who can speak to that as well. But forgive me, Representative Wilson, I missed the follow-up question.
Okay. My question was who has to report it to who? And if in order for it to end up being a misdemeanor, it has to be reported to through the law for that to happen. So does this punish the kids that don't report it, number one, and number two, does then the school have an obligation to report it to the police?
The school would have no obligation to report it to the police. This would merely be a tool that prosecutors would have in the 1% or less than 1% of instances that are especially serious injury or death. Especially instances where you might not have another charge that could be easily prosecuted because there would be that legal gray area about consent or not consent. Again, that's the sort of especially insidious aspect of hazing, not having consent to sign. Normally, with internal policies, with normal or less than serious injury or death type situations of hazing, when someone is getting paddled or razzed or whatever, it's internal. So students would be required to report it to coaches, administrators, et cetera, and school districts could handle that internally.
Okay. Representative Chris Tompkins, but hazing sometimes happens at the behest of coaches. So if you're to report to a coach who ultimately is part and parcel of this hazing process, in my mind, there's kind of a missing link there. And I'm kind of piggybacking on Representative Wilson's comment that my thought is if hazing is not allowed, and certainly it shouldn't be allowed by the adults, so if they are participating in a hazing act or propagating the hazing act, you should be able to go to the law and say, hold it, you know, you're doing something that is certainly what you would think that the coach or the adult should not be participating. It's one thing to hear, you know, when we talked about cyberbullying just a few minutes ago on the past bill, but this is where we're really dealing with either the captain of the team or the coach or somebody in charge. And I think that is very, very different, and it really should go to the law at some point. It's just my comment. And we do have we'll bring them forward to discuss that with them. But I think it is a serious thing. Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, on the first page of the bill, Section 1 describes what hazing is. That says it's causes a situation that subjects a student to a substantial risk of serious physical injury. And on page 4 of the bill, under the definition of Section 10, it defines hazing an act that subjects a student to the risk of physical injury, not substantial, but it also adds or severe or mental injury, or injures a student or the property. Can you explain the discrepancy we've seen between the definition of hazing in the first section and in the 10th section?
Absolutely. Representative Sadler, through the chair. So the differentiation we're seeing right now between pages 1 and 4 is the differentiation between what would be something handled by the law, by the legal system, and something that's handled internally. So with more routine, if you will, I don't mean to demean it, but more routine instances of hazing where someone's getting paddled or, you know, whatever's happening, that gets handled internally by school districts, by internal school disciplinary codes. Whereas if you have something that's really egregious and really serious, we have set a higher bar and a more stringent definition, and that's what you see on page 1.
So page 1, just to follow up, I'm sure.
Please.
So the definition of page 1 is first Title 11, which is and it's the crime of hazing, and on Section 10, page 4, it's the reportable activities of hazing. Is that correct?
Correct.
That follow-up question on the same topic.
Please.
How would one assess that an activity had the risk of subjecting a student to severe mental or emotional injury?
This is on page 4.
Physical injury, I think, might be an easier test, but the mental or emotional injury is a little tougher, so I'm just wondering how you might see that being interpreted.
Representative Sadler, through the chair, one instance that comes to mind that I remember was a time-honored tradition when I was in high school is that sometimes students would be dropped off at the very end of a road in Sick or elsewhere and on a cold winter night and be told to walk home, and they'd take all the clothes away from them. So they might make it back to town with, no harm, no frostbite, no whatever, but I suppose that would be a risky and an unnecessary situation that maybe should be called to the attention of a school administrator for however an instance like that would be handled by a school or school district.
Would there be any looking for any test or touchstone for what might prompt it? That could, for somebody, that situation you described could be a jolly challenge for some, but might subject someone else to severe emotional injury. What kind of touchstone would you bring to that? What kind of assessment?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I think an important aspect when it comes to defining what hazing is anything that's substantially above and beyond what's normally entailed in an activity or sport. So in football or wrestling, for instance, those are, you know, physical, tough sports, and anything that normally happens with wrestling and football is completely kosher, and we worked with legislative legal to make sure that and looking at statutes in other states to make sure that whatever is normally encompassed in the day-to-day of an activity is fine and not affected by this law, but anything that's not encompassed in whatever the activity is that entails risk or injury or mental anguish or however the definition is defined would fall under the grouping of hazing.
With your indulgence, one last follow-up.
Please.
An important thing I want to get on topic, would there be an element of community-based standards involved? In other words, say that the normal activity on the wrestling team in Sitka might be of a level higher or lower than might be experienced in Palmer, for example. So is community standards part of your intent, or is there a uniform standard?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, I'm not perhaps the best person to speak to this, but because this is being added to school district policy manuals, I suspect there's quite a degree of interpretation and community-based interpretation when each district assesses whatever policies come down from the Department of Education. So I suspect we're not talking about something that's in the penal code. There's sort of a liberalism of interpretation that comes to these, but I suspect someone from AASB could better speak to that, but that's the impression I've gotten with working with these organizations.
Well, to make that clear, thank you.
Representative Ledoux.
You know, I noticed that this applies to the school districts, which is, I guess, K through 12. Isn't most hazing actually happens in college?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, there is quite a bit of hazing in college, and while I didn't go to the University of Alaska and can't speak to how common that is at UA campuses, so parts, sections 2 onwards in this bill relate to school district policy manuals, but when it comes to especially serious incidents of hazing, Section 1 of the bill would apply to post-secondary institutions as well.
Thank you. And one more question or
Representative
comment.
Ledoux.
You know, I'm thinking about the incidents where you drop somebody off at the end of the road and you tell them to make their way back and it's cold and everything. I mean, isn't that the kind of thing that's even done on these Survivor television programs?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, yes, except that I don't think they take all your clothes except your undergarments when they do that. And that's the big difference. On a 10-degree night, it can be pretty trying. I've had friends that survive that, and they don't look on it fondly.
Did anybody get hurt?
No one did. I think though there's widely agreed to be sort of the potential for, if you're outside for a couple of hours without any clothes on, the potential of frostbite's not insubstantial.
And I suspect hypothermia is really the bigger question there. But anyway, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for a second round of questions. On page 3, line 16 in section 7 of the bill. There's language added that would say failure to report hazing, harassment, intimidation, bullying shall result in appropriate disciplinary action. I don't see a definition of appropriate disciplinary action, presumably on the part of the school district or school. Can you explain what you think might be appropriate disciplinary action?
Representative Sadler, through the chair, yeah, again, I think that comes back down to what local districts feel is best. I suspect appropriate action would be similar to action a school district would take with incidents of harassment or bullying. But again, I imagine every district would sort of find their own protocol.
And we don't have any school districts online to ask, so I think not seeing any other questions, I think I'll ask the department. We'll also have the Division of Juvenile Justice after them to be able to kind of go through what their thoughts are on this. And stand by, because I'm sure we'll call you back up again, Representative Christ-Tompkins. So if we could have the department come forward and speak to this bill and how it'll – and hopefully you heard some of the questions that we're going through and, what some of the options are and your thoughts. So introduce yourself for the record, please.
For the record, Les Morse, Deputy Commissioner, Alaska Department of Education, Early Development. I'll just address a couple of the things that I did here, and then if there are questions I missed, we'll go into those. What this bill is doing is just adding to definitions that already exist. So districts currently have to have policies around harassment, intimidation, bullying. This bill, from my perspective, defines hazing and requires that then to be incorporated. The policies that exist have to include parent engagement, community engagement in writing those policies. That's already in the current statute. So communities would be engaged in what does this look like? And then ultimately, the way things happen at the local level, if a policy is adopted, it's adopted by that school board through also a public process. The other piece that I think is important information so that you know where school districts generally get their guidance. Some districts have their own policy manuals. They work with their attorneys and develop them based on laws that pass at the state and federal level. Many of the districts, though, turn to the Alaska Association of School Boards that has a model policy in place. Each year when the legislature passes laws or laws pass at the federal level, they work with a school attorney to incorporate those pieces into their model policies. Many school districts just adopt those model policies and use the AASB's model policies. Some school districts choose not to do that for whatever reason. So this would be incorporated into their work as guidance to those districts. The other thing that I heard come up a little bit was reporting, and there's two types of reporting that occurs in the current law, and this just extends that hazing into that. But officials have to report, or students and people who work in the school, whether it be a volunteer, adult volunteer, or teacher, needs to report, but the current law says to the appropriate authority. So if the what would first be deemed as the appropriate authority actually helped conduct the hazing, then one would go to the authority beyond that. Typically, the principal would be the authority. The other type of reporting is if whatever incident resulted in a suspension or expulsion from school, there is a reporting to the department once a year of any events of these type that are defined in the current law. They get reported to the department in terms of the number of incidents once a year. Chair Gaddis, that's the questions I recall. So if there are any others that I might be able to help with.
Well, and I guess one of the things are, what if it's an employee, a coach, if you will, and we spoke about that. So you're certainly not going to report to the coach. You could report to the principal, but what is the punishment, for lack of a word? I understand that what could the students could be expelled or suspended, but what does this bill talk about in regards to the adults? I think that was one of the questions that we had as well.
Chair Gaddis, if the adult actually failed to report or was part of the issue, there would be other district policies in place regarding punishment, and failure to report under the current statute actually is something that is punishable if they fail to report. So if it's a school employee, it could involve some sort of personnel action. If the issue is so egregious, or actually egregious enough to actually be probably crossing the line into a legal issue, then it would probably be, in most cases, at least where I worked as a principal, it would have been reported to the police, as a student incident would have been reported to police if there's any potential crossing of the line that it may be a crime as well. So there are student punishments that are defined in student handbooks, but then there are employee punishments for not doing the proper reporting. And then if the adult was part of committing the crime or the incident, whether it be a crime or not, then there will be personnel action in most cases, potentially a report to the legal authorities.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just wondering, failure to report shall result in appropriate disciplinary action. And are you saying that there's already things in place that at the schools that would automatically be taken care of?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, that's in the current law. This just extends into hazing would also be part of that. So the current law requires that a local school district's policy has a disciplinary action in place for failure to report. So it is handled through that local policy, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sadler.
Thank you. And the previous question takes most of that. I hear you say that most school districts, if not all, already have such a policy?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, to be compliant with the law, yes, they already have a policy, but it doesn't include hazing specifically unless they voluntarily made that choice to include hazing. And they may have, but this now would make that uniform across the state.
And does the AASB uniform policy or model policy on reporting include sanctions for failure to report?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I can't speak for certain because I haven't looked at it, but I am completely confident it complies with the current law, so I would be pretty comfortable saying yes.
And follow up? Thank you. If I could veer the, and in your experience, Mr. Morris, how often, how big an issue is reporting of hazing or bullying when it gets to the policy, when it gets into reporting? I want to, everyone here is in a schoolyard and stuff goes on a schoolyard, but we have elevated it to a policy requiring reporting of teachers, classroom monitors, playground monitors. How often is this kind of thing reported and how often does it go through channels?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I'd have to depend mostly on my own experience because most of these things don't get reported to the state. But I was a principal for a long time. My wife was a principal. What I can tell you is that these incidents get more severe at the high school level and they get reported. They generally, though, do get reported because if a district is doing their job that they're supposed to do in terms of student handbooks and making sure all students are aware of those rules, typically in a school setting, someone's going to speak, whether it be if the adult observed it. I would say that it would be rare for it to be not reported, but there are those rare situations. If students reported it, though, they just talk, and so those generally get reported. The incidents happen at a higher frequency level high school. I was over a middle school. They do happen at that level, and I would say, you know, they're generally reported. In a 700-student middle school I was over, we'd have an issue of probably every month of that sort.
And in your experience, I'll ask you only to speak to your experience, what are some of the kinds of sanctions there might be on a school staffer who does fail to report?
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I actually have never dealt with a school staff failure to report, but in knowing about school staff's failure to report, they typically, and the only incidents I'm aware of, which I wasn't personally involved with, have involved being put on leave while a more thorough investigation would occur, and then potential sanctions could include loss of employment or a report to the legal authorities.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In here, most hazing events, I presume, would be reported under the other categories as harassment or intimidation or bullying. But do you see the usefulness of having hazing in here is so that everybody understands that that category is also covered?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, I'm going to leave that really for you to deliberate on. I think it's always good policy when you add more clarity, but whether you feel that there's that need for that clarity or not, I don't think I will weigh in on that. I think it's a policy call the legislature can make.
Thank you, and maybe we'll ask that question again with the Division of Juvenile Justice, so we'll bring them forward. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Excuse me. Whoa, don't leave so quickly.
Tried.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In your opinion, if hazing happened right now, and it's not in our statutes right now, would it be taken care of?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, in the places where I have worked in school districts, both as a teacher and a principal, because I felt our policies at least the last district I worked in, were really quite clear and the lines of what was appropriate was clear. I think they would have been dealt with. I can't speak to all districts, though, but in the districts I've experienced, which is just two, that would have been.
Follow up,
please.
How long ago was that?
I have been at the department for 10 years, so it's 10 years prior to that, and I worked as a principal before coming to the department.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Morris, the previous bill and this bill are somewhat related. I'm looking on page 3, line 4. This bill explicitly extends the reporting requirement beyond what a statute currently has on school or on transportation systems called buses. This explicitly extends it to school-sponsored or school-sanctioned activities during the school year. My question is, do you have any concerns? Is this practical, or how would you see that playing out? Reporting at school-sanctioned or sponsored events? activities, rather.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler. I think that brings clarification, but I think from my experience, and I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not speaking from that angle, but those events, in my view, already were covered, because if you're at a school-sanctioned event or school-sponsored event, you have to students have to follow the policies, and the adults supervising the events need to follow the district's procedures.
So it would clarify to explicitly extend this reporting requirement to school-sanctioned or sponsored activities.
Through the chair, Representative Sadler, I think this makes the makes the statute more explicit and clear.
Thank you. I agree.
Okay, thank you. And I did have both of these. Representative Ledoux?
Actually, I've got a question for the bill sponsor.
Okay, and we'll bring him back up. And while we bring the bill sponsor back up, I did have both of these bills planned on this day for this very reason, so we can certainly see the correlation, and if both of them are necessary, if one does what both of them, so on and so forth. So I'm glad that there is some overlap. Representative Ledoux.
I'll tell you what I'm worried about, and I want to get your response to it. That there's a fine line, I think, between hazing and initiation into an extreme sport. So suppose you want to join an elite running club, and Representative, I know you're a runner, and in order to join that elite running club, you've got to do, let's say in Hawaii, really, really hot in Hawaii, you've got to do an Ironman in Hawaii, extreme, extreme heat, and you're going to be having to run 35 or 40 miles. Well, I mean, a lot of people would say, that's insane. I mean, how could anybody possibly agree to something like that? And therefore, it must be the sponsors of this event who have power over you, because they're the ones that are going to be giving out the medal. How do you respond to that? Extreme skiing, I mean, any of those sorts of things that most people might think you're a little bit nuts doing.
Representative, would you, through the chair, I would love to do an Ironman, but I suppose that's unrelated to the question. I think the language that's really relevant is it's a context-specific answer, and so the context is everything, and it's a question of what's reasonably expected to occur when participating in an athletic, physical education, military training, or similar program. And so if doing 400 intervals on the track, say a 10 count of those, would be a form of torture for most normal people. But for someone on a track team, that's completely normal and customary, even if you might pass out or lose your lunch at the end of the workout. And in no way would that be hazing. It would be a tough workout. But something that's not normal and customary to that activity would be considered hazing. And in the bill statement, this is an incident that happened in Southeast Alaska from a Juneau Empire article. I mean, it reported JDHS athletes that had frostbitten hands and welts on their backsides that were the result of being ordered to hold onto ice until the skin burned, being held down and paddled by a group of students. And that would be an example of something that would be handled internally by the Juneau School District.
And actually, that seems like something that could be handled by assault and battery charges. But what about the development? I mean, right now, we know that there are Ironmen, and mm-hmm. certain kind of, in my opinion, kind of crazy people do that sport. But suppose you're trying to develop a new sport because, you know, people challenge themselves more and more and more. And so, like some of the skiing stuff, where, I mean, you're going in places where I can't imagine any sane person would be skiing down a mountain, which is not have trails and stuff. And yet, we're allowed to develop those sorts of things, which aren't necessarily within the purview of track now or skiing now, and somebody's got this bright idea. Well, skiing's, you know, just too easy. Let's develop something else.
I Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I mean, I guess I would, I'm having difficulty sort of envisioning what the new sport would be or what would be entailed.
Everybody has difficulty envisioning it until somebody makes it up.
Sure. And Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I mean, I suppose if a new sport were created that involved, you know, what might normally seem as harm to the participants of the activity, then that sport, too, would be covered on what's normal and customary and involved in that sport. It's, I mean, the high school sports in Alaska, for instance, are fairly, you know, pedestrian, if you will. It's skiing, it's running, it's basketball, it's football. I'm not aware of the Alaska School Activities Association, for instance, offering new sports that, you know, might make the X Games, just because Alaska high schools have, you know, limited resources and they're not too entrepreneurial when it comes to making new sports. But I mean, I appreciate the where you're going with the question. I think it would be covered by what's normal and customary within that sport.
I guess I'm just concerned that if your bill were in effect, oh, 1,000 years or so ago, maybe we wouldn't have the sport of boxing.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Christ Tompkins.
And Chair Gaddis, if I may, I'm circling back to a question, and Austin on my staff pointed this out while Deputy Commissioner Morse was up. This relates to Representative Sadler's question. Section 3 on page 2 actually states how there's sort of a community-based guidelines when it comes to incidents of hazing or harassment, et cetera, and that it's adopted through an opportunity for participation by parents, guardians, school employees, volunteers, students, administrators, and community representatives. So there's this sort of community-developed process when it comes to guidelines for hazing or anything else that's in these policy manuals.
Thank you. Let's bring up Tony Newman from the Division of Juvenile Justice. And I know that you have indicated that you're here to answer questions, but hopefully you've heard some of the questions and can at least speak to the bill itself.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, my name is Tony Newman. I'm a program officer with the Division of Juvenile Justice. And I thought the Department of Education spoke well to the process as it would unfold if a staff or another adult were to be found to have committed one of this offense. I can speak to how a juvenile, a minor who might have committed the offense, would be handled by the Division of Juvenile Justice. So if you have any questions on that matter, I'm happy to answer them. Basically, if law enforcement identifies that a minor has committed an offense, they will make the referral to the Division of Juvenile Justice, to the local juvenile probation office, where our staff will make a determination as to how to proceed with the case. That may involve court process. That may involve a diversion. For an offense like this, a misdemeanor, what I would expect would frequently happen would be that a youth would be deferred. That is, they would maybe a youth court process, maybe an adjustment involving an apology to the victim or community work service, but not necessarily for the case to be petitioned to the Alaska court system. So anyway, with that, I'd be happy to answer any further questions about
Thank
that.
Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for clarification, you're talking about Section 1 of the bill, not the in-school policy. Is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, that's correct.
Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Do we have any other questions? And I guess this isn't a question for you, but I've heard a lot about what we're going to do to students or youth, but we really have not addressed coaches and adults really in the same manner that we have addressed. I mean, it seems like we are almost holding our youth on a higher accountability than our adults, and certainly I think that our adults should be leaders, and this isn't a question to you. I'm just making an outward comment, and thank you for coming forward. Doesn't look like we have any other questions. We don't have anybody signed up. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to speak to the bill? With that, we'll close public testimony. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It seems to me that this is also, like the last bill, adding clarity to the statutes and letting people know what would be appropriate or not. Hopefully that this would mean that coaches would not be looking at the terms harassment and intimidation, but would know that the school policy said that hazing is inappropriate. And so hopefully what we're looking at is prevention here, by putting it in policy that hazing specifically is not allowed and defining that in ways that are appropriate. I think that this will lead us into better school atmospheres instead of having to react to situations that occur.
Any other comments? I'll ask what the will of the committee is. Representative Seaton.
Madam Chair, I move CS for House Bill 189, Version O from committee, with individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal notes.
Representative Sadler.
A brief point of order. Have we adopted Version O as our working document before passing it?
We did.
We did. Thank you.
Thank you, though. Seeing no objection, the bill will pass out of committee. This brings us to the end of our posted agenda today. This committee will meet again on Wednesday, April 2nd, and we'll hear HB 197. With that, the House Education Committee is now adjourned.